Hi, my name is Randy, and welcome to my 68th episode of Infotainment. I'm your round mound of podcast sound. Pound for pound, the best podcast around. And welcome to you, and especially you. And let's stop, drop, and roll right into the program. For those of you who have Kate Beckinsale on your Instagram, a famous actress, well, Kate posted the best photo bomb ever that I've ever seen. She is standing there, glamming it up for some event or whatever, dressed to the nines. And here behind her was this short, chubby little kid with a total ginger with hair that looked permed. And he was like, he looked like he was kind of frowning or didn't have much expression on him. But she called it, she was on a date with Prince Harry, but it didn't work out. She felt like she was overdressed. He was wearing like, she said trousers, I'd probably say Dockers. It was the funniest thing ever. I told her to take her date to a tanning booth. she'll ever read those. But anyway, it's the funniest thing. A kid's just right behind her, and she's got this just smoking outfit on, and he's a little redheaded. He looks like, Mr. Cotter on that show way back when. So those of you who remember that, as far as afros go. Well, now let's move on to another topic for your podcast perusal. Maybe I'll have to stop that after the reception Steel Balls Wheeler got. But if you have Amazon Prime, I was watching, I was binging the show Curb Your Enthusiasm with Larry David, the creator of Seinfeld, as the main star in it. I think it's one of the funniest shows ever. It even takes Seinfeld to the nth degree. But I was watching that one episode where Larry David ruins a dinner party. Only one episode, yeah. But he hit it right on the money when they gave him a present, some of his friends, and it was a GPS system. And he was trying to get it open, the plastic open on the darn thing, and he was trying everything. Finally, he just started stomping on it. And it's right on the money with electronic items. You cannot get, there's got to be put in there a gap or something so you can, or those little round deals where you can pull it open instead of having to take a hacksaw to it. Or I'm surprised he didn't get out a chainsaw. But it's not very good, but wondering why they secure electronics better than a lot of our food. And you just never know what's going to happen. Like that, I checked out Snopes.com on that one story where people supposedly were injecting individual water bottles for sale with poison. And they took that as being a false rumor. So, but now it makes me wonder. And every time I buy that kind of water, I tip it up just to be sure. You know, it'd have to be a really thick needle to even go through a cap. But this show on Larry David, the one of his friends, that one show I watched, they got into a car accident. And they needed a box cutter that Larry David had in his car, but he hadn't unwrapped it yet. And because his friends and him and his wife were in a different sexual position for driving in a car, and she needed her seatbelt cut. And here they show him at the end trying to get into the plastic thing that was encased a box cutter. Finally, he started stomping on it. It's like fun. But that is so true. On any electronic item, we make it so it's a little easier to get into. Then there was another episode where he had divorced his beautiful wife, you know, of course. And he was having relations with the girl from Palestine. And they opened a chicken wing place right next door to a delicatessen. And then they had protest groups on either side of the street, one between the deli and the chicken place. They weren't getting along at all, and Larry David was walking right between them, and this girl, he said, had given him the best sex he's ever had, and she was yelling at him, "I have a sister, and she can come join us." And he's supposed to choose sides, and it was just hilarious. He just kept walking down the middle. But if you haven't checked out Curb Your Enthusiasm with Larry David, I didn't have HBO at the time. Most people probably have seen it, but it is funny. And that's my recommendation for this episode of Infotainment, your television viewing. It's a pretty, pretty, pretty darn good program to watch on Amazon Prime. Great comedy show. The next topic I'm going to talk about is kind of grim, and I'm going to say some pretty, there we go. I thought my computer was going to dump on me, but it didn't. But there was a teacher in Idaho that's accused of feeding a live puppy to turtle, and he is now facing charges. An Idaho teacher accused of feeding a sick puppy to a snapping turtle in front of several middle school students was charged Friday with misdemeanor animal cruelty. I think that should be a felony. Preston Junior High School science teacher Robert Crossland faces up to 6 months in jail and a $5,000 fine if convicted. The school is in rural Preston, where the 2004 teen cult classic film Napoleon Dynamite was set. I didn't know that one. The turtle was humanely euthanized after being seized, EastIdahoNews.com reported Friday. The reptiles are considered an invasive species in Idaho. The story made headlines around the world, and many demanded that Crossland be charged, the news outlet reported. Yeah, I'd be one of them. A science teacher fed live puppy to snapping turtle in front of students. Witnesses say Crossland allegedly fed the puppy to the turtle in front of three boys after school hours on March 7th. The mother of two of them told a local newspaper at the time that the story had been blown out of proportion, East Idaho News reported. If anyone has the right to be upset, it is me, Farrellyn Hansen said. According to the news outlet, I'm not upset. I felt like it was the more humane thing for Robert to do than to just leave the puppy to die. The puppy was dying. Preston School District 201 Superintendent Mark Gee called Crossland's actions a regrettable circumstances, KTVB TV reported. Crossland faces arraignment at a later date. Attempts to reach Crossland at the school Friday were not successful, the Associated Press reported. I don't think he'd be able to reach that guy. Why don't they let those kids toss him into an alligator pond and see how he enjoys that? You know, I had a show a while back called What is Wrong with People? And that should have just been my title of this program instead of infotainment. And just say, what is wrong with people? And just have these stories. But I know at one time I was walking in the park and I was with some of my family members at the time. We found a little gray kitten that I really wanted to keep just wandering around a park area. It didn't belong to anybody. We brought it to the vet and it turns out it had that feline leukemia. And I would have asked, I don't know how vets can quantify the pain an animal goes through, but it was the sweetest little kitten. But we left it there to be euthanized. And that's what this dude should have done, is brought it to a vet. I don't know if it was whose puppy it was or whatever, but he should have brought it to a vet to have them decide what's the best course of action. You don't feed a damn puppy to a turtle. You know, here I want a pet and possibly will get one, but so many people don't even deserve to have the ones they own. And it just, so it says the puppy was dying, but, you know, bring it to a vet or something as soon as, you know, when you know that. It's just, you let three boys watch it too. What a smart teacher there. I don't know what people think these days. And I'm kind of partial to cats, actually, for some reason. I know a lot of guys don't like cats. But my first animal that I really remember well was a Siamese cat we had. And it was really friendly and followed me around like a dog. And another cat we had, Mystery, which I probably could have had a few more years, but that didn't happen. But stuff like that infuriates me. You know, just kick this dude into an alligator pond and maybe rescue him after a few bites or something. I don't know. I'd throw the book at the dude and give him the 6 months and the $5,000 fine. That's my thought on that. If you have a differing opinion, you can always email me at randyms12@gmail.com. Maybe there's more to this story or something. I don't know. Maybe the puppy was on its last breath or something. But still, you know, to let these boys witness that, it's like, what a idiot. Could use some definite improvement there. But now let's take a left turn and turn ourselves to another story for your podcast enjoyment. This story is a man allegedly smelled so terrible his flight had to make an emergency landing. People were reportedly puking and fainting in their seats. Human bodies are beautiful, flawed ecosystems filled with millions of tiny microbes and bacteria all mixing and swirling and dancing, delicate dances inside our guts. Unfortunately, our bodies are not precise, finely tuned machines. They are not perfect, and they periodically do gross things like, you know, randomly smell like weed sometimes. This is normal. And yet there are times now and then when a perfect storm of microbes inside a body create a reaction that produces a smell that is so bad, so heinous, so brutally awful that all other smells pale in comparison. This week, an unfortunate man on a Dutch flight reportedly suffered that kind of rare BO fate and managed to reek so bad that the flight had to make an emergency landing, the UK Mirror reports. This was no ordinary body odor. This was some kind of chemical weapons grade stench. The unnamed man was on his way from Amsterdam to the Spanish island of Gran Canaria, and when his scent reportedly overwhelmed the Transavia, these words, well, you're getting this for free, I'm butchering this crap. Airlines, cabins, it overwhelmed the cabin so horribly that fellow passengers started yakking. Others fainted, their own bodies apparently deciding that the only way to deal with the smell was to slip into the sweet embrace of unconsciousness. It was like he hadn't washed himself for several weeks. A passenger named Piet van Hout told the Mirror several passengers got sick and had to puke. The flight crew, not knowing what to do, reportedly tried to usher the guy into an airplane bathroom in hopes that it would quarantine his smell, but the frail lavatory accordion doors were no match for the Herculean smell. As passengers retched and blacked out, the pilot decided that there was only one thing left to do, and the plane made an emergency stop in southern Portugal to unload the sad, stinky man. Transavia's official statement said the flight made its emergency landing because of medical reasons, but an airline spokesman conceded to the Mirror that it is an indeed right that he smelled quite a bit. Man, if you got people puking and fainting, that's pretty hefty smell there. It's unclear if the smelly guy ever made it to his final destination, or if he was dipped into a Lysol bath by Portugal airline security and banished back to Amsterdam. But in any case, he probably would take a hard look at his diet and bathing regimen before flying again. I don't know, maybe they should just give this guy his own personal hazmat suit or something that they fill with baking soda or whatever when he flies. Or dump him in some chemical to clean him up. I don't know. You know, I've tried these, Febreze stuff in the bathroom after taking a shit. This one's a Hawaiian scent. Hawaiian flowers or whatever. And, you know, it just kind of comes out like shit-covered flowers. So, that doesn't really work. This is a test of the emergency podcast system. Remember, this is only a test. Welcome to the podcast is right. And the next showcase up for topics is coming under the heading of people are getting dumber by the minute, or what were they thinking? This item is from Colorado, where an FBI agent thought it was a good idea to carry a gun to a bar. And outside the bar, there was a whole bunch of people in a circle, and he was the one busting a real good dance move there. And he does a backflip, and his gun falls out, and he grabs it and accidentally goes off and strikes a person in the leg. And they had to put tourniquets on it and stuff like that. So not a real smart move to, I assume he was off duty, to bring your gun when you're going to be doing backflips at the bar. And what his punishment will be the result of whether he'd been drinking. I assume he was pretty heavily. Well, I don't know. He did the backflip all right. But grabbing your gun like that. Oh, my God. I mean, he's going to wake up and say, I'm such a moron. Why did I fire my weapon at the crowd? Or let my gun, or even take my gun to a damn bar. I thought that was not amusing, but kind of sad. And I saw a video on that today. Denver news outlets were all over that topic. I will forego the harmonica playing because I don't want any of my listeners to start having their ears bleed. But my next item up for bid on the podcast is right. Is a topic about being bipolar. Now I have a few secrets from my listeners, and I have calculated it out for myself that at various times of my life I've spent over a year in treatment facilities, and now I'm on a bevy of head meds, and spending over a year in treatment is very, it makes me very angry because you miss out on birthdays, holidays, and different things. And most of that time is spent, the doctor's spending time throwing toilet paper wads on the ceiling to see what drug actually works. You know, in my case, it's anxiety, depression, and manic episodes where when you're high, you feel like you're on top of the world. And you can do nothing wrong, and everything's great. And then when you crash, things start seeming not normal. And the worst thing I ever did was I swam naked in a motel swimming pool for some unknown reason. And that's what sent me back the last time. There was nobody else there. Thank God for that. But I did. Well, and then other reasons were I didn't have housing at the time, and they keep you in longer, and it's just a mess. It's bad wiring in the brain for me. But now that I've had a test that probably will become the norm for most people going through bipolar gene site testing for somebody who knew how to administer that, I'm on the right medications for me, at least at this time. And that could change, unfortunately. But I wish there was a cure-all, like a brain surgery or a magic pill to cure bipolar disorder. But I did find this story. It's about this artist. He turns his anxiety and depression into darkly hilarious comics. These illustrations by @AlexWithPen are super relatable for anyone who struggled with their mental health. And I wish this was YouTube, but there's some illustrations he's done where he's drawn up a caricature of a guy. He goes, "All my ex-girlfriends were batshit. Batshit, also known as guano, is a phenomenal fertilizer. And like guano, my exes helped me grow and provided me a nourishing environment." And then there's another illustration where like a coffee pot's filling up a coffee cup, and the coffee pot says fuck, and the coffee cup says everything. And that's some days you feel. Some days are better than others. But they say laughter is the best medicine. And I've used that to the fullest as a coping skill when I'm feeling down. But honestly, that's poor advice, he says. For most people, medicine is the best medicine. Well, yeah, keep me out of out of treatment. It is. But laughter can be a balm that puts our plates into perspective. It helps us move on and ultimately live. There's nothing intrinsically funny about battling anxiety and depression, but Alex McDonald, the man behind the Instagram account at Alex with Penn, says his path to comedy was colored by having what he calls a bad brain. Yeah, I kind of call it that too, bad brain wiring. And I didn't, and unfortunately, growing up, my parents thought that, you know, an aspirin and Robitussin cured everything, and it didn't. And I went through college without medication or anything, and I wasn't a bad student for the most part. So, but then it started hitting me after college, which is kind of unusual. But I wish I had been on this medication when I was 10 years old. You kind of wonder what your life would have been if you'd been on the right medication at a very early age for people with bipolar. But now, you know, it's a Ritalin generation, and it's different for every person. But this guy says, but after flirting with medication for my clinical depression for a couple years, he told Vice, I finally sucked up my pride and realized the brain I was issued at birth had faulty wiring and decided to try to fix it with something other than workaholism, jokes, and self-loathing as an anesthetic and fun with friends, all increasingly inadequate remedies or distractions. When McDonald started taking Lexapro, he landed somewhere between the Garden of Eden and the fifth circle of hell. At once invigorated and immobilized, it was a very condensed second round of puberty, but with 100% less boners. He said recalibrating his brain made McDonald long for a way to feel in control of his own existence, like I was participating in my life. And he's been doodling since he was a kid. But the joy he'd once found in illustrating withered in adulthood. But one day during a therapy session, while losing his mind on Lexapro, McDonald's doctor suggested he go home and draw himself, something he'd never done before. So I went home and drew 1,000 versions of myself, trying to find a caricature that didn't make me squirm. And I did. I found one. I bought these big sketch pads and a bunch of fancy pens, and sat in coffee shops for 2 weeks straight, obsessively documenting how I felt not good from day to day. McDonald's likens his initial self-portraiture as somewhat self-involved and vaguely incestuous, like catching a glimpse of yourself in the mirror during sex, but it's also inspired personal revelations. Drawing allows me to look at myself, he says, and to fight my lifelong reflex to not sympathize with myself. That's the way that I kind of view this, and the times I did stand-up comedy, doing something like that is kind of self-cathartic. It's better than going off the deep end and going off medication and grabbing automatic weapons. Of course, I don't have the personality for that. At one time, my family thought it was odd that I carried a Bible around at places that you normally wouldn't, and that was one of the signs. And one Easter, they suggested more treatment, and I said no. And unfortunately, I was taking medication, but unfortunately, it wasn't the right medication. And that's when they still had a hold on me, so I went through another round. But now I've been living on my own for quite a while and been dealing with it as successfully as I can, I guess. Living with mental health issues like anxiety and depression often compound nasty feelings of self-loathing. McDonald found that his illustrations, at once fastidious, hilarious, and tragically on point, served as a way to be a friend to myself when I was suffering. Having depression and chronic anxiety is, to put it clinically, extremely ass. It's not glamorous or dramatic or what Lost in Translation is about. It's gross and shitty and awful and boring, he added, but it's also effing funny. I mean, when you're laying on your never wash like a carpet, waiting for the energy and or courage to type a burrito order into your seamless app, it's hard not to find that funny. Not at the time, of course. At the time, you feel like Chris Christie is sitting on your chest, spit-shooting insults into your face. Though it takes a cocktail of self-awareness and a morose funny man mentality, McDonald found catharsis in naming his experiences and giving himself the gift of self-sympathy and understanding. McDonald's comics are wide-ranging and strike a nerve many people preserve for their own self-abasement. For my entire life, my impulse was to keep my uglier feelings private, he said. But having this platform where I can air out my gross, fetid inner life to people who feel the same or at least think it's funny lets me feel a new sort of ownership over my problems. It's clear from the gratitude-filled DMs McDonald's gets from his followers that they feel similarly, but the artist is still hesitant to take credit for being the voice of a community. It feels weird for me to pat myself on the back for that because I don't totally believe it. What I'm okay taking pride in is what I think I've carved out a tiny little corner of the internet for me, and some people like me to tell a certain style of jokes about feeling like shit all the time. Well, you shouldn't feel like shit all the time if you're on the right medication. But we shall move on with this. McDonald is a comedian by profession, which should come as no surprise to anyone who's perused his feed. Through humor, he's captured extremely relatable snapshots of his personal struggle with mental health. And by putting himself in conversation with his neurosis, he opened a door for others to do the same. And beyond the toil of navigating the middle ground between self-acceptance and self-loathing, McDonald has a thing for making people laugh, as do I, even though some of my segments aren't as funny as they should be, or they're kind of tragic, but maybe someday I'll find the ultimate funny story to give people a real belly laugh. But he finds a real profundity in sharing humor with friends and strangers on the internet. Like, you know, when you're walking down the street and you see a group of friends and you can hear them being as fun and funny as your friends, and you're like, how can there be cool, funny people that I don't know and will never know, just roaming the world? It kind of annoys me, actually, McDonald said. Unless they follow my Instagram, then I like it. Well, that's the end of that story. I was listening to David Letterman's show on Netflix, where my next guest was Howard Stern. And supposedly he is a little, deals with mental issues like OCD and stuff. And he said psychotherapy was helpful for him. And for the longest time, he focused like a laser beam on his career, and things started to suffer. And maybe that's why I took a little break from podcasting. I was just kind of zeroed in on this for a while. But we shall see how it works out. And I'm going to keep this one a little shorter because Steel Balls Wheeler was longer than I usually do. So I think it's about time to call Black Alert. Black Alert. And spore drive this episode of Infotainment to the interwebs. I would like to thank you, and especially you, for downloading this program and telling other people about it if you like it. I actually had some new downloads in Kingston, Jamaica, and Milan, Italy. And that's the first time for that. So I'd like to thank those listeners. I hope they keep listening. Thank you for your time, whether you listen by laptop, desktop, iPad Pod or form, iPad Pod, and whatever else. So, God bless, and bye-bye, folks.